Hey, it's Joe. If you're like me, you've been investing time and effort into getting stronger and building a foundation of health with a variety of activities, including resistance training, endurance exercise, high intensity intervals, and playing games requiring hand-eye coordination, such as pickleball. Heck, I thought that was enough. But what I haven't been doing is working on my foundation as an athlete, my feet. In my daily routine, I have not had a single drill or protocol for making my toes and feet stronger to better control my body. And when I look at my feet, I can see the impact of a life of wearing shoes that are pointy and tight. I have shoe-shaped feet. And it turns out that shoe-shaped feet are not very good for what I need my feet to do. Control my balance, agility, and dexterity. Oh, and it turns out that shoe-shaped feet are also not good for producing power. Dang. On episode 146, I am joined by Tyler Benner, who is an athlete just like us, who discovered that his athletic performance, which was world-class in archery, was sub-optimized by his poor foot strength. Tyler joins us today to explain his long journey to figure out how to improve his feet to improve his athleticism. All right, let's talk to Tyler Benner about building strong feet for athletic performance and for better agility, balance, and dexterity in everyday life. Tyler Benner, welcome to the Wise Athletes Podcast.
Oh, I'm so excited to be here, Joe. Thanks for having me.
I have to tell you that I'm interested in feet. And maybe not for all the reasons that other people are interested, but I'm glad to have you on here. Your background is different. I mean, I've had podiatrists on the podcast in the past, and I've learned a lot from them. And some of the advice I've actually taken, and some of it I haven't, and so I want to get into that with you as well. But your background is different.
Yeah.
Different, but compelling. So you were an archer, like an international competition level archer. Yeah. And that somehow led you into talking about posture, which kind of makes sense. You know, me shooting arrows in PE in school, I understand that.
A little bit.
But then that kind of led you into feet. Tell us this story.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, my story always starts with archery, and I grew up in rural Pennsylvania, and Pennsylvania has just an amazing archery culture. Oh. So nearby where I grew up is not only the largest archery store maybe in the world, but definitely in the United States. It's called Lancaster Archery. Shout out Lancaster Archery.
All right.
Yeah, there's all these like kids programs, and it's, you know, U.S. Archery has something called the Junior Olympic Archery Development Program. And so then there's all these clubs that have kind of like a scale where you shoot for score. And if you reach certain levels, you know, you get like merit badges effectively or something like that. And, you know, so it kind of like provides a path for people to get better in archery.
Great.
And so, you know, people in my family loved shooting archery. And so at least like I had like a recreational exposure to archery in like the backyard, you know, like kind of like you're describing. But then like it was at this program that I really saw that there was this competition side of it. I was good at it immediately. And so I started even traveling all around the country shooting, and within the first year I was already at a pretty high level, at least on a junior level. Mm-hmm. Anyway, and that's really where so much of my like passion and interest came from. And then it was a couple years later that I started making the U.S. national team and traveling internationally. You know, then it really shaped my life in a dramatic way because it just opened lots of doors and opportunities for me. And some of those opportunities were then living at the Olympic Training Center and living with athletes of all these other sports and working with all kinds of physiotherapists and trainers and chiropractors and doctors and, you know, people bringing in the latest in recovery technology, or, you know, we literally had shoe developers from the major shoe brands come to the training center to interview athletes and see wear patterns on their shoes and, you know, do this. We thought we were doing fundamental shoe research or something like that. Hmm. And it wasn't until years later that I had this awakening about foot strengthening and the condition of my own feet that I had really had to like have an Immanuel Kant awakening of awoken from my dogmatic slumber. Right. Hmm. So it's been a really fascinating journey for me. And I, at one point in the past, I would have thought that shoe companies had done all this research, and that like their products literally like were protection for me to prevent getting injured. And that me using them fastidiously or in the way that they were designed was like me engaging in this kind of customer product designer relationship where like if I just did what the product designer had intention for me, that I was going to avoid injury or things like this. Mm. And again, like that itself was kind of a reawakening that I had to come to terms with. And I don't know, you know, we're still only a minute or so into the conversation here, but what I've literally done is I've changed the position of the bones in my feet, not only my feet, but then my total full body posture. And I have the odd reality that a video of my feet changing shape has gone viral on the internet through no effort of myself to do this. You know, so I've literally had hundreds of people comment about the shape of my feet, whether they thought my feet looked better before I did all this effort strengthening and realigning them and that I didn't know what I was doing, or, you know, people making salacious comments, or I mean, it's like I've kind of run the gamut a little bit on these kinds of things at this point. Huh. And, you know, some of the incredible doors that have opened is like different, you know, I've written some convincing emails, I suppose you could say, to people who run some of these different shoe brands. You know, as I've taken on this challenge of designing a foot-shaped cycling shoe, you know, I've met some really interesting people who have then like influenced some of my thoughts and experiences. And, you know, one of those is this guy named Dr. Mark Cucuzella, who he got me running in sandals a number of years ago. And in combination with another one of your previous guests on the show, the inventor of Correct Toes, Dr. Ray McClanahan.
Right.
Dr. Ray's a friend. I, you know, running in Correct Toes is some of what really kickstarted my journey of like improving my foot structure and foot shape. So some of these kinds of people, the doors that they opened, you know, from my own background in physics, one of the things that was always taught to me in school was that we're built on the shoulders of giants. You know, and that there are people who have done certain kinds of research or, you know, bodies of work that it's like we stand on the shoulders of those other people, because when you see the logic and what they put together or how compelling their data set is, it's like it's because of the previous successes of these people. I mean, here's a crazy stat that'll blow your mind is Dr. Mark has run under a 3-hour marathon at the Boston Marathon 32 years in a row.
Wow.
I mean, it's like unbelievable levels of not only performance, but like avoiding injury and being able to be that consistent. I mean, I don't know anybody who's done something quite like that.
Yeah.
You know, and he's the guy who got me running in sandals. I've gone on long runs with him and like watched his and how he moves, you know? And so it's like, well, this is real. This is possible. This is doable, even from someone who's grown up in a Western culture and doesn't have, you know, has so much shoe wearing built into their culture.
Nice. Okay. So this is great. I think that the thing that resonates with me is that the idea is that we know that the body adapts to whatever you train it to adapt to. You know, my bicep gets stronger when I am lifting heavier and heavier weights. And so it makes sense that my feet would adapt to whatever environment I put them into. And even if I have done the wrong thing and I wore dress shoes, you know, most of my life that gave me calluses and pains in my feet, and I wore tight, pointy cycling shoes, and, you know, and I just did all the things that made my feet become shoe shaped rather than foot shaped, that I could still get my feet to adapt to something that's better for what I want my feet to be good at. I'm not talking about good versus evil. I'm just talking about, you know, I want a performance. And so I want to figure out how to teach my feet how to become better at the things I want my body to be better at.
Sure.
I found a quote on your website that sort of appeals to me. I know that you studied philosophy, and I can see it in your writing. You have an orderly mind. The quote is this: strong posture is possible for everyone if you will truthfully accept your starting point and pursue symmetry and balance in a dance with gravity. Tell us the thinking behind that.
Sure, yeah. Well, you know, I want to segue that also to what you had just asked about a moment there, or like, what's a simple thing about our feet or something like this, or like, how can I improve something about my feet that anybody can do regardless of your starting position?
Okay.
So the way I'm going to talk about that is a little bit of a connection to my archery. Little context on archery is top archers are literally shooting between 2,000 to 3,000 arrows a week. So literally over 100,000 arrows a year. And the bows draw about 50 pounds or maybe 45 pounds for at full draw. And so it's a lot of force and a huge amount of work that your body does. And so I think a lot of people misunderstand that archery is very much an endurance sport in this way. It's almost a little bit like marathon runners or something, in that like you really need the conditioning of your body to be able to show up every single day to practice and fire hundreds of arrows a day. And that, you know, the wear and tear on your fingers and, you know, holding onto the bowstring and so forth, it's like, you don't just because your shoulders can handle it doesn't mean that your skin is strong enough, or you know, it's like there's a complicated spectrum of where the strength comes from, I guess. And some of what the challenge that I experienced from archery was that, you know, the bow is again about 50 pounds at full draw, and that's a lot of force. And so how do you balance over your feet properly? Well, the challenge I faced as an athlete was I would lean on my heels a little bit. And it, you know, your heels are where you don't have to exert too much additional balancing, I guess, or like, you know, it's just totally bone on bone, basically.
Yeah, one less joint to immobilize.
Yeah, exactly, right? But you're not at your optimal balance when you're almost kind of falling off your heels, basically. And so as an athlete, you know that kind of the more weight you can get forward on the front parts of your feet is like where athleticism occurs, because now you bring in the ankle joint into the ability to provide a lot more stability.
Sure.
You know, eventually, it was years later when I started running in toe spacers and running in sandals and these kinds of things that, like, it really helped me understand just how deficient that my big toes were in making the arch in my foot. And so then, like, that was the really shocking, like, eye-opening thing for me to realize, was like, wow, I've been an athlete my whole life. I've done all these incredible athlete things, and I've made my body really strong, and I'm a very fit-minded person, and still I ended up with wildly deficient feet. Like, how is this possible like this? And there's a lot of other athletes that face this too, you know, and you talked about the body's ability to compensate, which is part of what's interesting about bodies, is that they are capable of so much compensation, but it's not a value add per se. You know, it's like, I think you want to give yourself as optimal a foundation for balance as possible, you know, and like, okay, what was my motivation? I wanted to be an agile old man, still able to get up and down from the floor easily without using my hands. You know, like, I wanted to go for as many hikes and runs as possible and not have tendonitis, you know, and like, that's always been in my mindset. And then I could feel myself heading down a path of like, wow, I'm still getting that regular pain in my leg or whatever. It's like, why is that happening? I'm doing the stretching, I'm doing the mobility drills, I'm doing the strength training, and still I'm experiencing this. You know, so because of my understanding of my leaning challenge from archery, and then like, I had some awareness that like, well, why does my body have a tendency to do that? You know, like, that's where I had to internalize my lack of symmetry. And it was running in the toe spacers. What I really perceived was like, it made me feel like the ground shifted direction on one side of my body, where it was like no longer the direction of where I thought the ground was to propel myself to move forward was in the same direction that I had habituated in all of my walking and movement and running patterns. And so with the toe spacers, then that really got my feet to start to open up a little bit more, create more of the archability, you know. And then before we had started the podcast, you and I were just talking about the difference between, you know, plantar fasciosis and plantar fasciitis, you know, the difference between like almost like dead or, you know, just inflamed and in pain. And, you know, if you've been an athlete that spent 20, 30 years in narrow shoes, like you have an amount of tissue in the bottom of your feet that haven't been awoken in decades. So like there's a habituation process to improving your foot strength like that too. And the one really simple thing that I want people to try and get their heads wrapped around is that like your big toe is the most important toe for balance. And riding a bicycle, we really care about your balance. So it's like if that big toe alignment is being pushed over by the front part of the shoe or also dorsiflexed, meaning like lifted up, then like that inhibits your foot's ability to make the arch with your foot by getting more weight on the front parts of your feet. And that inhibits your balance and your athletic agility and your ability as an athlete. I think that talks a little bit about like, what's the goal? The goal is to make your big toe stronger and to use the alignment of the big toe in aligning your ankle, your knee, and your hip. And there's a little bit more to it from that because we can look at like ballet, we can look at Pilates, we can look at gymnastics. Like there's a number of sports that have, they have some athletes get to a really high level of skill and strength and alignment, I guess is some of what I'm trying to say. And so we can learn from these people. It's like if you're at a beginner level of having good alignment with your big toe and your ankle and your knee, it's like we need to just focus on the core concept of alignment itself. You know, it's like, no, we're not going to turn everyone into ballerinas, but like there's definitely things to be learned from what this group of people knows about correct alignment for your whole leg and how the alignment of your leg connects to your core in order like to control your center of mass.
Okay. This is good. And it goes past this idea of, you know, having a foot shaped foot, you know, rather than the foot that has sort of evolved over time to fit in the shoe, the foot containing devices that we've been calling shoes our whole lives, that, you know, push the toe over and push it up like you were describing, that suboptimizes its function. And our body gets used to that. It'll adapt to whatever. And that's great that our bodies are good at that. And we don't even have to think about it. It just happens over time. And then it feels natural. And so we can get to where we don't even know that there's a problem. I mean, maybe we look at our feet and we can go, gosh, I don't like to be barefoot because my feet don't look good. I think that's probably the only reason that I might know that I've got foot issues, like the overlapping toes or bunions, or, you know, maybe they've got arch pain. You know, that was something that I've had off and on. And I guess I said that you didn't agree with before we hit record was that most people don't have problems with their feet. They don't have optimal function because of the way that they, you know, wore the wrong things and didn't ever train their feet in an intentional way. I mean, they trained them indirectly by training, you know, because you can't avoid using your feet, except maybe if you're a swimmer or something, you know. But if you're, you know, when you're on the ground, it's your feet that's, you know, your connection to the planet, and you are using your feet all of the time. And so your feet are getting trained when you train. But if you're not conscious of how you're doing it, or if you're wearing the wrong thing, then your feet are getting trained in a way that isn't optimal. And so that is really what I'm mostly after, is this idea. And just to remind you that the audience here is the older athlete. And so we're athletes. We want better performance. You know, maybe we're even trying to compensate for, you know, the effects of aging, and our performance is declining, and we're looking for opportunities, fruit we haven't ever harvested ever in our lives, that we can use to get better at things. I mean, I like never did core training, as an example, you know, until I was in my 40s. when I was a kid, it didn't matter. I did core training when I did football practice and, you know, and whatever. But I think that now that I do core training, my core is stronger and it helps me not have back pain and et cetera. And I think that the same kind of idea applies to the feet, where if I can be deliberate in what I'm trying to make my feet good at, my feet will be better functioning and then I'll have some downstream benefits. And so I said older athletes, and we talked about the athlete part, the older part, one of the things that we think about as we look down the road is we think, falls. I want to keep my muscle mass. I want to keep my strength because I don't want to fall and break my hip and then the fuse has been lit. That's the beginning of the end. Well, I gotta believe that foot function and being able having proprioception in my feet is maybe the most important thing in not falling down. Having the right, you know, big toe strength and whatever other things you can tell us and training mechanisms you can give us would help us to not fall. I will say that most of the falls in my life so far, which have not resulted in me breaking anything, have been related to foot stuff. You know, twist of my ankle, down I go. You know, or stub my foot on something and down I go. So foot mechanics has got to be a big part of falling or not falling.
These are really interesting points. I think it just shows how curious that you are. The passion that you talk about it, I think, comes from all the conversations you've had with other people who also have these same kinds of ideas and motivations for themselves. And you articulate it really well. You know, I would say like you're kind of the person I've been dreaming of in this all along because of your curiosity and motivation for stuff like this. I think a couple of the things I would say about it is like, one, athletes deserve to know. And what they deserve to know is just what does a strong foot look like and can do? You know, I wish that as a 10-year-old that someone showed me some of the basic things that I know now of just literally what a foot can do. You know, and before you hit record, we were talking a little bit about you doing planks or push-ups or something like that with your feet, where you had tucked your toes underneath and you're literally balancing on the top parts of your feet. Yeah. It's like, that's a thing that I never knew was safe or okay with my feet until the last number of years here. But I sure didn't learn it as a young athlete.
Yeah.
And I wish that there was one single physical trainer or coach of any sport who was like, hey, feet work like this. Here's what we have to do in order to give you full range of motion and balance. And it's like the whole reason why my feet didn't have the ability to balance forward on my feet better and why I leaned backwards in archery is like because my feet was missing that fundamental athletic ability to balance in the way that my body would eventually learn once I focused on it as a training modality and I recognized my own limitation. You know, and like they have medical names for these kinds of things. Oh, they call it hallux limitus or something like this, right? I find that sometimes this vocabulary just separates people from what's actually going on in their body, or it makes it sound too much like a medical condition instead of just kind of like, I don't know, I'm going to segue back to archery a little bit, but you know, but I've written this archery textbook with the U.S. Olympic archery coach, and like the book is about archery technique. And what's hard about archery technique is that you have to use so much of your whole body to draw the bow because it takes so much force. You're holding this 50 pounds at full draw. And like that takes the total alignment and coordination of all of your body and your core to really do that with power and precision and to be able to do that 100,000 times a year. You know, so when you're only using 80% of your body because you're missing 20% of your total capacity or capability because you just don't even have you don't have the right alignment, you don't have the right software running the computer, you know. The thing I'll say about that is like I love car racing too, and you know cycling is a great way to say this as well. But performance doesn't always look like what we think it looks like. Think back of like a 1970s Formula One car, you know, and like what were the shape of the wings? And it's like, well, all the wings were perfectly straight. you know, and like they had these certain ideas about where they need, how they needed the car to look and so forth, you know. And then you look at a more modern car and it's like, wow, it's got all these curved surfaces. And, you know, it's like, it's not that they're reinventing physics itself. It's that they're like more in attunement with the reality of the world, you know? So as an athlete in cycling, so much education out there for coaching is all about how to make your engine more powerful, but it's not really about making your suspension better, for instance, you know? And it's like a race car can go much faster if it has a really good suspension and a good engine. You know, and so like, I don't really think that hardly anyone has really thought too much about what does performance in cycling look like from an agility standpoint, a cornering, a safety component, a not falling or crashing. Some of your previous podiatry guests could pull up a number of papers for us about toe strength and the ability to control falls in elderly patients because of their particular capacity of toe strength. It's like we have some of the basics of these kinds of things, but we don't really have our more everyday people like showing people this simple non-anatomy nomenclature path towards success. You know, that it's like we want to integrate these ideas into your everyday life. You know, you one of the things you mentioned you wanted to talk about was like efficiency and stuff like that. Yeah. It's like, well, you can make your feet stronger by like having different textured surfaces in front of your kitchen sink, so that as you're like making your coffee or doing your dishes or whatever, you get 2 or 3 minutes worth of foot stimulation. And it's like, that's all that we're just trying to wake up the nerve connection between the brain and the body of what is your posture. Are you even aware that you're all hunched over from your 8 hours of sitting in front of the computer? I love Katie Bowman. She writes a lot about anatomy and posture. And one of the ways she likes to describe posture is she talks about it like food. And so like, if you only have a couple different kinds of postures, meaning you like sit in one particular chair all day and then you like only walk on a concrete surface, and then that's kind of your total movement for the entire day or whatever, then your movement diet, as she would describe it, is like you only had 2 nutrients in it. You know, and if you can like mix in a lot more variety of foods, it's like, well, what's your stomach going to feel better on? You know, it's like a variety of foods or like pizza and rice or something. You know, it's like, ooh, that's going to get old real fast.
Yeah.
So I think there's a variety of interesting ways to like talk about this subject in ways that like we're totally deficient as a society and culture. So like this is definitely a societal thing, in my opinion. You know, and what athletes deserve to know, they deserve to know the physics. They deserve to know how the kinetics of their bone and their body translates into movement, you know, in a real physical sense.
Awesome. Yeah, and I like the connection back to gut health, because it's sort of like training of anything, where people can have gut issues and they start eliminating things in order to stop whatever discomfort they're having, and that can work. But now they're not getting the nutrients that the things that they stopped eating had in them. Yeah. And so the idea of an elimination diet is to find the one thing that bothered you, you know, put all the other things back, and then try to find a way to make that one thing not bother you, so you can add that back too. But if you stay in the elimination diet for the rest of your life, then maybe you don't have the gut health issues that you had before, but you now have other problems as a result of the lack of the nutrients. And so, you know, it's like if my knee hurts, I have found more, especially as I got older, if my knee hurts, resting it almost never is the right answer. You know, it can feel a little better when I'm not using it. But as soon as I start using it, it feels terrible again. It didn't get any better, no matter how long I rested it. In fact, the longer I rested it, I think the worse, because, you know, all my muscles atrophied and everything else. So there's this business of you've got to give some stimulus to your body. And if you've got some dysfunction, some pain, you've got to somehow work through that, not suffer, but figure out how to get down to a level of movement that is tolerable, and then you can strengthen, you know, heal through blood flow and a little bit of activation to, you know, teach the body, hey, this is the thing that has to get healed, so send some stem cells over there. And then the pain starts to go away and you can work out a little harder, and then over time you're good as new, and then you can get better from there. Or even if you have no injury, but you just want to get stronger, right? It's progressive overload. You just got to stay after it. You got to go, you got to stress it a little more than it was used to. And then you come off and you let it recover. And then you stress it again a little more than it was before. You know, that whole thing, it's the cycles. You know, I should have a podcast called The Cycles of Life. I mean, everything I talk to everybody about, the experts are always talking about, it's cycles. You've got to stress and recover. And so it's not the middle stuff. If you want to get better, you got to accentuate the waves. That's at the extremes is how you teach your body to become what you want it to be. Or, you know, unfortunately, maybe you're teaching your body to become what you don't want it to be because you're not thinking about what you're doing.
I love this topic because avoiding injury is definitely an athlete's skill, I would say. It's not something that you totally are just born with, or it's like a talent that you inherently have. You know, I think that the really listening to your body and trying to internalize the feelings and internalize how much in pain am I, how tired am I from that last workout, how do I feel after a night of rest or after a meal, what am I hungry for, like, really actually getting people to be introspective about themselves is a serious challenge, I think. And so I'm quite curious just hearing you talk about it in the way that you are and like the way you described it of what did you call it? The cycles?
Yeah.
I feel like that's a hard reality for many people to accept, that like the cycles exist for their bodies at all in this manner. Hmm. You know, that it's like, I think many people tend to feel like I'm not injured until I'm injured. And then once I'm injured, my body was perfect in the first place or whatever. So I just want to go back to like the way it was perfect a few minutes ago or something like that.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just feel like you have an attraction to the cycles. And now you're like, ooh, I've learned that like that's where the gains are. And so how have you, one, done that and avoided injury? And then like, two, how do we make this a more palatable subject for people who are like, that this itself is an eye-opening for them, that like, ooh, boy, these cycles are what I really need to be mindful of?
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's a good question. And I would say that I haven't avoided injury doing it, you know, because I push to the edge.
Perfect. But that's the reality people need to hear,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
So how, you know, what I guess maybe tell a little bit about that time that you like, you pushed too far and then you were like, ooh, I overdid that one. I was too overzealous or something.
Yeah, yeah. My latest thing, which might have to do with feet, in fact, is I have been trying to reintegrate. And I say reintegrate because I'm reaching back many years to my youth and I'm trying to reintegrate sprinting into my workout.
Oh, fantastic.
Routine. And I'm sprinting on grass, which is really, now that I am speaking to you, another reintegration. You know, I used to live on grass. I played football and soccer and, you know, everything was on some unstable surface. And I started doing it because it gave me a little bit of a cushion, right, rather than running on a hard surface. But I also have noticed that it's unstable and there's holes in the grass and all kinds of things that I've got to watch for. So I'm getting my brain involved in this process. But anyway, I've been sort of ramping that up. And, you know, I would run for 10 paces and then I would take a couple of days off and then I would do 50 paces and then I would take a couple of days off and then my knee would hurt, right? And I'd go back to 10 paces and I've been upping my leg workouts in the gym as a part of this. So the first thing that occurred that was that my hip flexors were screaming bloody murder. The, you know, because I was not using them for many, many decades.
you know, except as they got tighter, me sitting in a chair or sitting on a bike, which is sort of chair shaped. Yeah. But now I'm like pulling on my leg as hard as I can. And they're like, holy crap, Joe, what are you doing? And so I had to back off from my sprinting altogether for a week just to let that heal up because it was ungodly painful. I couldn't even do my morning stretches anymore, which involves a little bit of a stretch on that muscle. It cycles, but sometimes the cycles get longer or they get less intense. But I'm trying to push on what I'm capable of. And sometimes I push too far and then I got to back off. But the idea is that I'm going to keep pushing and pushing and getting better. And then I, you know, I want to be able to do, you know, 100-yard sprints, 3 or 4 of them a couple times a week.
Yeah, that's I like the way you talk about that. What was a time, or I guess the thing I want to hear you talk about is like, how do you know, even in you're in the pursuit of this high part of the cycle, that it's like, ooh, today actually I need to not go further. I need to do less than I did yesterday. It's like, how does somebody learn that sensation about themselves?
That is a learning thing. It's an experiential thing where you feel something, you feel a little niggle, and you are using your judgment on, I'm going to push through that one, or I'm not going to push through that one. And the thought that has to go through your mind, anyway, in my mind, I go through this thought of, okay, if I hurt myself, then I might be, I'm somewhere in the, I'm going to have to miss a workout to, I'm done for the rest of my life on something. You know, there's some chance of being in that, somewhere in that range.
Totally.
Versus I get another set in today. So mostly I back off quick. If I feel something that feels a little funny, I go, no, I'm just going to let it go. I'll come back next workout. And maybe I won't even remember I had this niggle. You know, hopefully I won't remember because it won't happen again. So but getting back to my sprinting thing, my knees tend to hurt after I do that. You know, even when I was just doing a little bit, my knees would hurt a little bit afterwards. As long as they didn't hurt during, then I felt like, okay, that's all right. You know, I'm stressing them and I'm maybe damaging them a little in a way that is okay. Maybe it's even what I'm after. I don't really know. But as long as it recovers in a day or two, then that was all right. And you learn from mistakes, mostly.
Mm-hmm. Well, I really like this conversation because I don't think too many people get to have this conversation so often. And then also our ego always gets in the way. You know, it's like our desire for self-improvement, our desire to set a new record or just feel like you were fast that particular day or something. It's like, it's so easy for that to override our internal sensation of, oh boy, I don't feel great today. You know, like, ouch, that kind of hurts. So yeah, I think it's so important to bring this up because that, like, how many coaches have talked about not injuring yourself or like that this is a skill that you have to learn and like develop about yourself. And you might even have to like write down how you felt after workouts. You know, it's like, it depends on your personality a little bit of like, how you go through this process of introspection. You know, I think different personality types are going to need different ways of introspecting and kind of outsourcing the thoughts. So that way then later on, they can use more logic by maybe like looking at some data. And then it's like, oh boy, I'm in the overtraining zone right there because I can see I wasn't able to get my heart rate up as much, or you know, like there's a number of ways to go about it. And I can also understand and connect with people feeling like there's information overload, you know, and I think that that's some of a little bit of what this whole foot strengthening subject falls into is that like people get a little bit of information overload, I suppose. And then it's become, you know, like you said, the efficiency metric of like, well, how am I spending my time? And I can only research things so much before I don't have brain capacity to learn more today or something. So that's just where, you know, my experience of having shoe companies come to the Olympic Training Center and like, I thought they were the ones doing the research, you know? So some of what's really motivated me along my path, you know, is a That's why I've named the brand Strong Feet Athletics. It's like, I just want to show real examples of people with strong feet and what that means for their total body and posture and alignment. And it's fascinating to me that here we have multi-billion dollar sports companies and they don't make any educational material about how to make your feet strong, even though that's what their primary business model was built on, was selling products for the feet. So that's kind of fascinating to me that, like, as a society, that we've ended up in this type of a dystopia where the companies that make the most money off feet don't actually educate people about feet, which, that's fascinating.
I'm sure that there's people in those companies who are advocating for doing that. And the people that run the companies say, hey, we tried that and it doesn't help us sell shoes. So we're not spending any money on that. We're not confusing people about that sort of thing. We're just going to try to get people to buy our shoes and we'll incorporate some of that stuff in our shoes.
See, it's interesting if that is the true viewpoint, because then, I mean, they make some incredible emotional media about inspiring people to do more, you know, do it even when you're tired, run faster, harder, whatever. And it's like, they're really tapping into these deep psychological things, you know, so for me, that still is just like a limited viewpoint of like, okay, the next quarter, we can't sell as many shoes if we go educate people about their foot strength. But, you know, like I think that's the difference between a founder of a company who's like really motivated about a particular passion and is like, look, I've made this company in a result to what's going on in society. You know, so I see an opportunity to do that. You know, when there is this kind of a divide, you know, within a society, it's like, that's where I think interesting things can happen. Like art, you know, the intermeshing of art and science, like actually producing something new.
Yeah. You know? Well, and so surely there are people who are interested in the, you know, this learning. Those are the people who are listening to our podcast. They're trying to learn. That's why they're here. And so maybe we can give them some more details.
It's hard to be an outlier, you know? So what I think you and I are in both agreement on is that there aren't really that many people yet in society who feel as strongly as we do about making our feet strong.
Oh, yeah.
And so there isn't really a broad understanding across athletes that making their feet strong is a fundamental component of increasing their athleticism or a foundation of their like athletic journey of any sport. Like that's what motivates me to go change that within a society. And like, I want to help the future 10-year-olds like this, like learn some of these things, even if it's subconscious learning, even if they just see a couple videos of people who aren't a ballerina or something, like doing something that looks really shocking to like see, you know, a large burly man walk on the tops of his feet or something like that. And it's like, oh, that's why that guy has so much agility on the football line. Like, look at what he can do with his feet and his balance. That's why he's a better football player.
Awesome.
You know?
Well, so I think that the one thing that people should come away with is that you need strong feet and a strong big toe and strong arches and good proprioception in order to not just have good athletics, but to be, you know, to have good posture, to have lack of pain, you know, in your body and not fall down. And so I wonder if we could get into what are some of the things that maybe you do or you think people should do to kind of just start this thing. And so one of the things that people can't do, right, they can't have a list of 100 things to do for their feet every day.
Yeah.
But if they had 3 things to do and then 3 things to do once they got through that, those first 3 things, anyway, something like that, I think people could embrace it.
Rather than necessarily like some drills or something that I'll share, I think I'm just going to share about like an awakening that I had of my own journey. Okay. And so that is, I realized that I needed surfaces to give me feedback to my nerves and my nervous system. And particularly what I'm talking about are like rocky surfaces underneath my feet or surfaces of like different height. So not just a totally flat surface, but something at an angle or these kinds of things. And then also some of the surfaces are literally spikes. And what I needed from the spikes in particular was like, you can still raise up on the front parts of your feet. So like literally to do a calf raise or something like this, right? But like I've tried to really become dramatically better at calf raises, not on like a strength perspective, more of a balance. And like, am I actually using all of my toes? You know, so especially for me, like, and many people are going to have, I think, the same challenges, is that narrow shoes are going to push your outer toes more into the middle of your foot. And then it's going to be harder to effectively get your pinky and your fourth toe to like really help make the bridge of your foot, you know, one of the arches. So I needed these rocky, spiky surfaces while doing a toe stand, you know, or to raise up on the front parts of my feet. Am I actually connecting to the pinky toe to use that first ability or not? And it's like, I was not good at that, or I still am not very good at it. And I can show you like pictures and videos to demonstrate that a little bit more. But I'm certain that almost everybody out there struggles with trying to do a toe raise standing on a surface like spiky rocks or literally a bed of nails. And it's like, I now can like jump up and down on beds of nails.
No way.
It's like, well, how have I learned how to do this? You know, again, it's like, it's a function of controlling your center of mass, right? And so it's like, you're trying to spread out your weight over the surface area that you do have, you know, and then you're getting a nerve stimulus from the bottom of your feet. You know, one of your guests was Dr. Emily Splishel, you know, and she has a textured surface that is like a really gentle introduction to what we're talking about here compared to a bed of nails is what I'm really trying to get at there. Like, you know, her surfaces give you that same nerve stimulus of like, where is the ground, but not like you're standing on a bed of nails that are really sharp, you know? And so as your body increases in your ability to control your center of mass like this, that's what you need to rehabilitate yourself. You know, that's what I needed. And like, I needed that nerve stimulation, especially on some of those outer toes. And then it was like, wow, it takes a huge amount of mental concentration for me to actually connect to those outer toes and use them to stabilize, or frankly, like the big toe. You know, anyone who has a bunion, that's a function of them not being able to use their big toe with power. So like they have no ability to make the arch with their foot if they have a bunion, because that's like totally deviated the alignment of the big toe, and that muscle underneath controlling the big toe is completely shut off. Well, when you have the spikes underneath your foot, that will give you immediate feedback if you're lifting up on your feet in a balanced way or not. You know, so it's kind of one of these things where performance, again, it doesn't look like what we think it looks like, you know? And so like, what does someone have to go learn how to do to get better at a thing to develop this otherworldly balance or ability to control their center of mass? From Tai Chi, for instance, there's this one blog I follow, and the guy draws these incredible diagrams, and the diagrams are especially about controlling your center of mass. And they show how the master, if he's going to throw his opponent off balance, it's like, that's how you make your opponent weak to an attack. You shift their center of mass to now they're like falling off balance, and someone falling off balance is not going to be able to block an attack coming at them. Right. And so it's like, it's the same concept of, it's just really starts from the basics of the physics. Can you raise your center of mass on the front parts of your feet? And then can you maintain that stability from side to side? And it's like, I believe this enough that like now I practice all of my archery standing on surfaces like this, because I need that feedback to really control my body left to right, forward to back in my balance ability. And like, I've had to come to terms with the fact that I was terrible at it compared to what my body can actually do. Not that I'm maybe bad at it compared to other people in the population. Even I was at a very high level compared to others, perhaps. But compared to what my body could actually do, and I by that I mean stand or jump on spikes, or you know, really control my center of mass in a very, you know, high skill way. Like that's the take home I want for people to come to terms with. It's like controlling your center of mass. So just starting from that simple toe raise is like where so much of this understanding and change in your body can come from. It's like, am I really utilizing the backside of my body, for instance? You know, Pilates is really good at helping people learn that like you have a front side of your body and you have the backside of your body. And most people are wildly deficient about the backside of their body because we spend all this time sitting in chairs, and contemporary culture doesn't really have that much backside of the body movement, you know? So that's why most people need much more help with those kinds of postural alignment, you know, correctives than others.
Okay, so this is good. And I think that another thing to add on is that, you know, as people do drills or exercises or stimulus, like these rough surfaces you're talking about, that then they should also then apply these improved skills to things that they do. And maybe they don't shoot arrows, but maybe they hike on rough surfaces, or they play pickleball where they have to move in 360 degrees, and being balanced on your feet means you get to react faster. And so they should be able to see improvements in their performance without even really thinking about it.
Certainly.
If they are successful.
Improved big toe strength is going to change your agility dramatically, especially for something like pickleball, because like that's where all your change of direction comes from.
Right, right. Okay, and so part of that, I guess, is wearing the right kind of shoes.
Well, it's not necessarily the right kind of shoes, though, you know, because you look at like boxing or any kind of martial arts sport, and like they've been talking about the power of the punch comes from the big toe for forever, you know? It's like that's some of how I knew that these kinds of things were really important. But what I had to really internalize was that my body had ended up in this bad shape, bad posture to correctly use as much of my big toe power as I could. And it's like that's what I thought that the shoe companies were protecting me. And I was using their product in some kind of a, you know, oh, this is going to prevent injury. But you know, that led me down the wrong path effectively.
Well, but if I'm this boxer, but 12 hours a day, I'm wearing pointy shoes, and then I put on my boxing shoes, which, you know, facilitate me using my big toe, but my big toe is getting like no exercise most of the time, then I must not be optimizing, you know, my big toe function. And so I wanted to shift into the cycling shoe thing that, you know, you make a cycling shoe. And I wonder, have you noticed, had people tell you that they have better power, better performance from the shoe that is designed for the foot, for the bike? Or is it just a less of wearing a pointy shoe and damaging you?
Well, we certainly don't have any, you know, peer-reviewed public papers or something to share with anybody yet about, you know, riders have more power or something like that. So, you know, I think this does get back to what I was saying earlier of like performance doesn't always look like what we think it looks like. And that a lot of cycling education has been largely around trying to give you a stronger engine, but not really at all about other parts of cycling of where performance can come from too, which again is something like balance and agility and the ability of, you know, trajectory choosing effectively. And I think that especially is related to the shape of your foot inside the shoe and how secure you feel balanced on the pedals or not, especially at a high speed environment. You know, so the balance on your bike, I mean, I think that we've seen that bike fitting itself has changed quite a bit in terms of some of the postures that people have on the bike. And people really understand, I think, better now that like both the arms and the legs are part of the suspension, and that like you need to have certain ranges of motion built into your cycling posture so that you can absorb the bumps. And then when you really see someone who is highly skilled at that they pedal so silky smooth, even though the road is bouncing around all underneath them. It's also some from the running that I've learned to do with sandals. So by learning to run in sandals, again, on like really rocky, I do almost all trail running. My brain had to do this change of where is it safe to step? And I think that's very related to not hitting potholes while cycling, for instance. Okay. You know, it's like the ability to choose a trajectory that's safe for the speed that you're going, that like sees the road in front of you. And like, this still is, I don't see this hardly on any cycling education, or, you know, they're always about what's your VO2 max or something like that. And it's like not actually about what's the balance of your right leg versus your right leg, or left leg versus right leg, or left arm versus right arm. And how are you like shifting that around as you're riding? Like, that's some of the conversation that I think we need to have in terms of how can the shoes that I've made help create more performance for a cyclist? I do have anecdotal things from people saying like, wow, I didn't realize that spreading my toes was going to feel so good riding my bicycle. Wow. You know, it's like my own curiosity of like, what does it feel like to even ride a bike in a shoe shaped like this? Like, that's why I made the shoes in the first place, because I wanted to know what it felt like, you know, and I felt like I couldn't ride my bike with my old shoes clipped in anymore because of just how narrow I saw what was going on. And then like, I knew it was like a type of cognitive dissonance in myself if I kept cramming my feet back into these really narrow shoes. I was like, I can't do that anymore. And then, you know, I had all these kind of functional challenges to figure out of like the cleat alignment, you know, because if you make a wider shoe, you can't put the cleat in directly like the middle of the shoe because the pedal spindle is a particular length. And, you know, there were many of these things that were unknown to me years ago. And so I was like, well, I'm just curious to see what this is actually going to be like as an experience. And then I just found out the experience was great. To some degree, it was simple. It was like, oh, once I made it and now I can just kind of like let my legs float underneath me, and it just feels like I'm applying pressure on my feet in the way that feels symmetric to me. That's the experience I want other people to have. And certainly there's a different sensation that people will have riding in the shoes we've made compared to any other shoe on the market today. But it takes someone like you, who's as introspective about their internal feeling, to, I think, reap most of the benefits of this, you know, because you have this curiosity or this desire, like, how am I feeling? I know that I used those other shoes and that gave me some bursitis. I got tendonitis because, I wasn't able to like really put power or pressure on the pedals that I felt weird or something like that. And you weren't able to articulate it more than that. But you have to have that introspection, I think, to really understand why I've done what I've done, and why the design choices are this way. And I just think cycling is kind of lagging behind a little bit, like for instance, the running shoe world or some of the casual shoe world, because there's already a number of brands who are making shoes that are shaped like this.
Shaped like feet.
Shoes shaped like feet, right? And so there's already a lot of people, they've already changed all their casual and everyday shoes, and then their toes have spread out a little bit more. They're already reaping a lot of the benefits of that, but they're annoyed every single time they want to go ride their bicycle because there isn't a compelling option of a product in the cycling world. You know, so I see this as like the education that we're talking about, making your feet strong, it's going to start to go into all these different sports verticals, and athletes of all these different types are going to start to have their own stories to tell about this experience. And so I'm excited to help facilitate that, especially in the cycling world to start. But, you know, I know you're an avid tennis player. It's like, there isn't a tennis shoe shaped like this yet either, right? Mm. It's like, okay, sure, there's some wide tennis shoes or something, but they wide does not mean wide. They don't have the same shape. So we're literally talking about different geometry. Different geometry means different alignment of your bones inside the shoe. It's really like your foot structure inside the shoe that we care so much about. And it's like, if you've made your feet really strong, you're not going to fit in, quote, regular shoes anymore. Your bones are not going to cram into that coffin.
What I heard some time ago, but I'll mention it here, tell me if this works for you, is that if you're interested in knowing if your shoes are compressing your toes and keeping them from functioning properly, then take the insert out and then step on it. And if your forefoot is wider than that insert, then your shoes are pressing your toes together and they're too narrow.
I mean, certainly the sock liner test is a great kind of simple test. There's a lot of success stories of this kind of thing at this point. So I just want to encourage people that regard, like, I personally try to be a good example of how much change is possible, because I had hallux limitus and I probably still do to some degree, you know, like a much more rigid big toe. And then that's literally meant years of consistency from me of trying to make it better. It's not that I've been so maniacally focused on it every single day, you know, it's just that, like, I've recognized that I have this limitation and that I've been trying to do something about it consistently for a long time. And slowly over time, I've gotten a little better alignment. I have less tendency to have this one particular type of pain because of my misalignment or something. It's like I've been able to reap some of the personal benefits of that. And so I just want to inspire others that they can have success on this same path.
Nice.
You know, that if they do exactly what we're talking about of, like, listening to themselves, doing some analysis of, am I overtrained? Am I in too much pain? You can't go into the red zone. If you go into the red zone, you're going to end up injuring yourself, you know? Yeah. And, like, walking that line of, okay, wow, I actually have a bone that I'm trying to shift inside my body. I didn't even realize I could do that before. No one ever told me I could move the cage around or something. It's like, I'm going to get out of this cage. And apparently that cage is my own skeleton. You know, like, that's a concept that I don't think, you know, many people have really allowed themselves to think yet, you know, but there's more and more people having success doing this than ever before. And I try to be the good example, and athletes deserve to know. That's what I like to, that's what I'm motivated by. Athletes deserve to know the reality of the physics.
Awesome. Well, that was great. Hey, this whole conversation has been very enjoyable to me and I've learned a ton. And I appreciate your time. Tell our audience how they can find you online. They can look at your shoes. They can learn more about you.
Yeah, we've made the first mass production foot-shaped cycling shoe. Head to strongfeetathletics.com. Would love to hear from anyone. Send some messages. There's a contact form on the website. Tell your story. Yes, we have a sizing guide on the site there. And yeah, would love to have you try the shoes. You know, it's really exciting. It's literally been an 8-year process to develop and manufacture the shoes and sell a product at a price that customers deserve. You know, I could have come out with the product years ago at a higher price, and that just wasn't the business that I really wanted to try to do. So we really held this one back until we really had something compelling and at an affordable price that everyone could use. And so I'm thrilled. It's been kind of the journey of a lifetime to get here.
Fantastic. Well, thanks very much. I'll get all of that in the show notes. So if you didn't take notes, then you can check there to find these links. And also, I'm going to put some of those videos, that viral video that you talked about with your foot changing shape. That'll be a good one for people to watch. All right, Tyler. Hey, thanks very much, buddy. Have a good one.
Thanks so much, Joe. Really appreciate it.
All righty. Bye-bye. Thank you so much for joining my conversation with Tyler Benner. You can find more information about Tyler in the show notes.